Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello, I'm Natalia Shpilova-Said. I'm a host of New Books in Literary Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. Today, I'm speaking with Joanna Nizhinska, Tamara Trojanowska, and Agnieszka Polakowska, editors of Being Poland, a new history of Polish literature and culture since 1918. This volume was published by the University of Toronto Press in 2018. Joanna Nizhinska is Associate Professor in the Department of Slavic and East European Languages and Cultures at Indiana University. She's also the Director of a Polish Studies Center at IU. Tamara Trojanowska is Associate Professor in the Department of Slavic Languages and Literatures at the University of Toronto. Agnieszka Polakowska is a freelance translator and editor. Hello, Joanna, Agnieszka, and Tamara.
Hello.
Congratulations on the publication of this impressive work.
Thank you very much.
Being Poland, as I mentioned, is very impressive. It's a volume that counts over 1,350 pages, and it presents more than 60 essays by authors from all over the world who specialize in Polish literature and culture. Would you tell us about this project? How did it start?
The idea for the project was born quite a long time ago at one of our international conferences in Polish studies, 12 years ago, I believe, in Toronto, when a group of scholars, transatlantic scholars, realized that we really need to have a new history of literature and culture. Since the previous histories of literatures and literatures at the time did not cover the last 40 or 50 years of cultural production. So having under consideration our needs as faculty members in various educational institutions, we decided to put together a team of editors and start conceptualizing this project.
So why did you choose this particular format? 60 authors, and it's impressive to say the least. And how is the book structured?
Well, we decided to do this project differently from the projects that already are in existence, or were in existence at the time. And used. There are three major histories of Polish literature on the market, but the last one was published in 1969 with small short amendments later on. So all of the three, Manfred Krytl's, Czesław Miłosz's, and Krzyżanowski's, are single-authored, monolingual, authorial takes reading of Polish literature, the history of Polish literature. They also cover the whole of Polish, the whole history of Polish literature. But they also end way before where our students' interests usually are nowadays. So hence the need, but also hence the format. We decided that we wanted to create a volume that will be polyphonic, that will create a new community of scholars, will be transatlantic in a sense of involving colleagues from Poland, North America, including United States and Canada, and also some colleagues from other European countries. So this conversation that spans generations, it's multi-generational, spans different institutional cultures, different methodological choices, different theoretical approaches, also different statuses of our colleagues. We have junior colleagues, we have stars, we have people who are in the middle of their careers.
There's
already
a couple of independent scholars.
There is a couple of independent scholars. So we wanted this to become a multivocal history of Polish literature and a volume that will also be written specifically, I mean, composed of text that will be written specifically for this volume. So there's only one reprint. And mostly, so this was the foundational concept of who will be there. And then there was, of course, a conceptualization of how we wanted this volume to look like.
Mm-hmm. And the translation part.
Yes. Well, some of the contributors, I'm not sure where actually about the percentages, but let's say it was 50-50, were writing in Polish. I think the decision to allow everybody to submit in Polish was made in order to ensure that they deliver, you know, their most authentic sort of expression of on the subject of, and it was my luck to be able to translate some of these texts. The challenges of the translation process, I think I probably weren't as keenly felt because of the time span that the project took. So I did not have to do this all in a year. The text came in phases. At the same time, that meant that there was some, for me, the challenge was to maintain some kind of a uniformity in how I was translating each text, while also respecting the individual style of each author. English and Polish are extremely different grammatically and stylistically. The way that people, academics write in Poland is, well, frankly, worlds apart from the way that academic discourse looks here in North America. And so there was an additional challenge of ensuring that while the style is maintained, to some extent, it is also readable for the audience for which this book is intended. And that is an English-speaking North American or Anglo-Saxon audience. So I did have a lot of help. A lot of the editorial decisions were not just mine to make. They did come from the main editors. So that certainly made the job easier for me as a translator. I did not have to take responsibility for every single decision. We had a wonderful team with whom we could consult.
Well, the subtitle of the volume says A New History of Polish Literature and Culture Since 1918. And I think that you already touched a little bit on this section, but I would like to have some specific moments as well. So I guess I have more than one question here. Why 1918 as a starting point? And of course, it can be guessed and understood, but still I would like to have your input to that. And why not earlier, for example, or later? What new perspectives do you highlight and offer? It is mentioned in the beginning, the histories written before this one were also monological. Miłosz's book in particular was a personal and at times even a biased account.
Well, 1918, as, there are several reasons why this particular date. This is, of course, the date when Poland regains its independence, statehood, after 123 years of partitions. So in periodization of Polish culture, this is a very distinct date, which also resonates with the title of the book, one of the understandings of the title of the book. You can understand this title in several different ways, but one of the understandings would be also as Poland being coming to its being as a state, and being and becoming Poland. A very practical reason for this to start with this period is that, as we mentioned, the previous histories that we were that were our predecessors did not cover the material that needed to be covered, the 40 years of culture. And this was also the period that was usually met with the greatest interest from our audience, from our graduate students, from colleagues. And there are several reasons for that. But I think that one of the most important reasons is that modern literature, contemporary literature, has the greatest number of translations. You know, that there's simply plenty of material to read in English that needed to be critically treated and presented to the English-speaking audience.
Now, of course, another part of this subtitle is a new. Mm-hmm. Well, it's indeed a new history in the sense that we already talked about, so no need to repeat that. But also, it's a new in the sense that how we conceptualize the volume intellectually, what we wanted this volume to include. And without going into, you know, a list of specific titles and a table of content, I think it is very much worth mentioning that the book starts with a very comprehensive outline of three major paradigmatic frameworks for Polish culture that all go back, way back into the past. One is Sarmatism, the other one is Romanticism, and only the third one is Modernism. All three are treated in two voices, very different, sometimes poles apart in terms of positioning of the authors vis-a-vis that material, and this was also done on purpose. And they kind of lay the ground for the understanding of the meta-narratives of Polish literature and culture. We also do have sections in which we discuss major strategies of creating and reading Polish literature and culture. We identified four specific for this culture. We have a fantastic section that broadens the understanding of what we mean by Polish literature and culture. That includes, of course, diasporic culture, literature and culture. Also, Polish literature that has been written in languages other than Polish. It also treats the issue of translations, the kind of transatlantic and migrations of literary production. And it's only the fourth part that brings what readers may identify as more classically understood history of literature, which is actual genres. But in order to enrich that section, we also included genres that are very rarely covered in those classical models. We went definitely beyond, you know, prose, drama, and poetry, and have chapters on reportage, on film, on popular culture, on mass media, on graphic novels, and an essay, for example, also including literary theory as a particular subgenre that we wanted to bring into this volume. So the conceptual framework of the book is basically to create a new way of understanding the modern, which we identified as starting in 1918 for historical reasons, and also to broaden that framework to include other voices that are and have been prolific within the cultural production in the Polish context, and often have not made it into the actual histories of Polish literature and culture. So these would be the two ways of describing how this volume constitutes, in fact, a new history of Polish literature and culture, very briefly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor's the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And what's the intended audience for the volume? Is it the audience inside Poland, outside Poland, both?
I think the primary audience is clear with by the choice of language. Mm-hmm. It is intended for readers outside of Poland. Readers in Poland have access to a wealth of materials, and they do not have the same need to have this material presented in this form as readers outside. But more than just readers, more specifically, the book is meant to serve a function in a classroom, especially for graduate students, but also for undergraduates who are perhaps wanting to have an introduction to Polish literature that is accessible. I think there was a lot of effort put into making the references within this book readable to this English-speaking audience, of bringing in examples that are perhaps in some way complementary from Polish culture across to American culture. So it is very much meant to be a pedagogical tool, a resource, and I think it has already, at least during the book promotions, there's been a number of positive comments from teachers indicating that it will indeed play this role. So I think we are all quite thrilled mm-hmm. about that. It is meant to be a book that students can refer to as they explore, on their quest to explore Polish literature and culture.
So the book is written by authors who live outside Poland as well. Would you share your ideas on how literatures and cultures are read, understood, and experienced from within, from outside, so to speak? What does it add to our understanding of culture? What is probably lost or hidden?
It's a very complex question, because on the one hand, we may say that, you know, nowadays in the global market, this free transmission of cultural products that include everything from songs, films, novels, reportages, and everything else should probably be read and understood as this general, well, universal wealth of cultural production. But we also know from actually pedagogical experiences that this is not necessarily so, that contextualizing literature and culture is as important as analyzing it or seeing it in the landscape of various correspondences and synergies. So I think that it's still reading translated literature is a challenge because, of course, some things gain and some things are lost in translation. So translation, of course, is an extraordinarily important part of this whole project, also because we rely on translations to be able to make that literature in any way accessible. But in many ways, finding a corresponding context that is not too heavily weighted with detail, that then the literary uniqueness gets lost in the explanation of all the details of contextual details, historical or otherwise. I think this is a very, very difficult balance, right? So on the one hand, we want literature not to function not completely outside of those specific, unique cultural contexts in which this literature was written. And on the other hand, we don't want that context to completely overshadow or weigh down the reading experience that may indeed in the new cultural context bring brilliant interpretations simply because they reverberate. The literature itself reverberates with a very new referential framework. And I think that it's extraordinarily important to allow for this new referential framework to vibrate and to resonate. And that is, for me, that has always been the most interesting, challenging, and difficult balance to maintain.
Yeah, and one of the ways to deal with this problem of creating rich interreferential mm-hmm. network was just the very structure of the book, where different modes of approaching the material is very visible. So we are giving different types of maps to our readers. And the first map, first division of the book, big part of the book, which is called Transmissions, really deals with these large meta-narratives, right? What shaped Polish...
Transitions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There are transmissions too, but...
Yeah, transmissions is part three, transmissions.
Yes, it comes right. later.
So the first part, those big meta-narratives that really shaped Polish cultural imagination, they're like, I don't know, like really... showing the borders of the countries, and then in another part called strategies, we present four different strategies of interpretation. In some sense, those are like different lenses that you put on to look at the map, mm-hmm. More than just the map itself, mm-hmm. right? Those are basically angles from which you right. want to look at this map, and those are really sometimes complementary, sometimes contradictory modes. We have a transgressive mode, we have emancipatory mode, canonical and compensatory. And then we shift to this issue of diasporic literature, translation literature in other, Polish literature in languages other than Polish, so really kind of like othering the language, the literature from within and culture from within. So no more treating literature as something that is linguistically defined, but really looking at it from a much more dynamic perspective. And then finally, that fourth part on genres and their discontents. The discontent is very important mm-hmm. here because, of course, on the one hand, it's a very good organizing tool, genres. It's a good tool not only because it's working with something familiar, all the traditional histories of literature would present genres, but also because in terms of cultural export of Polish literature, the question of genre was very much embedded in the idea of Polish film school, Polish school of poetry, Polish school of reportage. So this is how the kind of literature was reaching context outside of the Polish context through genres. On the other hand, of course, if you remember, plenty of postmodern debates about uselessness of genres, mm-hmm. or genres being so high British that they don't exist anymore. One wonders, right? We still think that there is something to be said mm-hmm. about traditionally construed genres, and it's a good organizing tool, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. And especially that each chapter on genres has smaller sub-chapters that deal with specific, most striking figures, authors representing a particular medium, a particular genre, that also allows us to put a lot of kind of heterogeneity and multiplicity.
And this structure also invites very different kinds of reading. So the book, when you talk about what audience is it for, this book is also for very diverse audiences, people who want to study Polish literature and read this particular book from cover to cover linearly. It is meant for the audience who just wants to open the book at random and read at random about something or other. It is also for a reader who wants to wander and get lost and then reemerge in an unexpected place. It's for someone who, like a flaneur, wants to take a stroll and enjoys the trip for a short time and then takes a break in a cafe or in the interwar Polish cabaret or, for that matter, at a movie theater watching a film or meeting a particular author. It's for someone who finally wants a big landscape and wants to just stand there and wonder why and how this culture had produced this interwoven, conflicted, chaotic, wonderfully dynamic landscape of influences, unique features, and dangerous crevices over which we may fall and break our neck. So this is, it invites courageous readers who want to climb and those who want the lazy ones who want to stroll and everybody in between. So in other words, the strategies of reading are those various strategies of reading are deeply embedded in the way that the book is constructed.
Also the garden of forking paths.
And the garden of forking paths, where you can you can get lost.
Every choice you have other forking choices, right?
Yeah, and so then you may get stuck there. You may get stuck in the middle.
Yes, but I think that this very, again, dynamic and pluralistic and democratic and polyphonic structure that Tamara described really reflects just the very qualities, contradictions, tensions, ruptures. It's just the richness of this, you know, strange beast that is Polish culture. Mm-hmm. And then one of our promotions, someone said that a great advantage of studying Polish culture is that you don't need to worry about problematizing. It's prepackaged.
It's pre-problematized
for you, right? It's a prepackaged.
Yeah. I wanted to say something just about the your question about the difference between the inside and the outside view, and I think one of the reasons why this book includes scholars from not just Poland, but also other countries, scholars who are not already at the top of their profession, but rather just entering it, is because distance matters. And all of these positions are imply a certain distance, a different kind of a distance. So being up close is awesome for details. And we do get a lot of facts and anecdotes and things that would be hard to access for somebody outside of Poland from the Polish authors. They have at their disposal a wealth of tiny little minor information that they can very skillfully bring forward to present. Of course, the outside perspective perhaps registers less details and yet provides sometimes a fuller view, right? So it just has some of the blind spots are eliminated when you step outside of the thing that is directly around you, surrounding you and influencing your everyday life. So the way that these authors approach their subject differs because of where they are. And that difference matters in terms of how we view culture and literature to begin with. So I think the book was meant to bring both sides together, mm-hmm. to give you a glimpse of the up close, the very personal, and but also, you know, the sort of, yeah, the little bit, the look from outside. Mm-hmm. What does it look like from a distance? How can we read it without sort of breathing it? Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
So one of the tensions that the volume also mentions is the tension between modern and postmodern. And I'm very tempted to ask this question about how the tension between modern and postmodern probably informs the volume and shapes the volume at the same time. In what way does it shape critical approaches to literature and culture?
It's a very difficult question. Why? Because the postmodern, I think, as a term that would define anything other than you know, general characteristics of fragmentary, multiple, it doesn't have a critical edge that we could apply to answer your question. In other words, clearly we are no longer thinking within the modernist paradigm. Clearly, we have lived through the dismantling of that paradigm and still are clearly aware of its very solid presence in our thinking. And yet, by the same token, no one can now claim that the postmodern framework has not happened. So the way that we were talking about the structure of the volume clearly points to that lesson learned from what postmodernism brought into our view and into how it changed our way of thinking about culture. And at the same time, when you were asking about critical assessment, I don't think postmodernism can allow us to really talk about it. So in many ways, I don't think this is a framework within which we can say anything other than we have already said. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there are other critical notions that may help us think about this volume. Someone just yesterday mentioned the rhizomic way of looking at it. Whether this indeed is the most useful, I don't know, but it definitely catches something more precisely than the broad term that is really indeterminate after, you know, many decades of its existence, such as postmodern. So if I were to think about it in critical terms, I would say it's not following the linear mm-hmm. passage. It's offering this kind of rhizomic view of literature and culture.
It seems to me that you're saying that the lesson of postmodernity has been so internalized that it's not kind of a category that we need to engage.
No, plus I don't think it has ever offered an actual critically useful it turned into a very descriptive category, you know, a list, an endless list of features and characteristics, and I think that yes, it's been internalized and
it's been internalized in a sense to get to that list,
right?
You need to
That's right.
Perform a few critical
yes,
activities,
course.
Right, well, to get to yeah. that. So what I was saying, right, yeah. that's already behind us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the volume covers cultural developments starting with 1918 and progressing into the current moment. So where does the volume, so to speak, take a break?
When it ends?
Yeah. I don't want to
probably
put an end.
Probably when we accepted our last contribution. It was our assumption that we do not want to present a kind of canonical only, I don't want to say ossified, but kind of already sanctified by time version of Polish culture. It was very important to catch that moment in statu nascendi. So like this past last decade, right? So I think that if you want a number, I would just tell you probably till 2015, something like
16,
that. 16, mm-hmm. right? So very, very recent developments. Mm-hmm. But we were not afraid to, actually not only not, we're not afraid, we encourage that in our contributors to make statements that are risky and that will only be validated by time. And, you know, this is always what happens when you deal with the most recent production. You really don't know whether it will stand the test of time or not. And I think it's part of this kind of dynamic interpretation that that the book tries mm-hmm. to present.
But it's also part of what's new in its concept, that is treating the current as already historical in a sense, right? A material for a history. So the book, in fact, starts in 1918. The book starts in 1918 and, in fact, takes us back into the 16th and 17th century. It's a history, and in fact, it claims that what happened just now already belongs to it without any or very little verification by time. And in both directions, it actually claims, I believe, that there is that there are continuities and discontinuities, there are knots and loose ends in that culture that need to speak to each other and to the reader in their either very far distance or very close proximity.
And I will even extend it further. It projects something onto
the
future.
Into the future, yeah.
It's a kind of imagining an identity of culture.
Mm-hmm.
How it's projecting onto the future and trajectories that we think maybe are inevitable,
mm-hmm.
maybe are possible. But you know, certainly this is where our imagination takes us. So we were trying really to treat. We were trying to be like futurists in our own time,
mm-hmm.
right? And really treating that past as something that very much resonates in the nowness and something that will continue with us into the future. So we hope that, yeah, there's also this
mm-hmm.
prediction almost mm-hmm. mode, right?
Yes, yes. Or postulate in a
postulate,
sense, right?
Or,
but it also, of course, in includes
horizon.
Horizon, yes. But it also includes mm-hmm. certain hope that the book will serve mm-hmm. more than mm-hmm. you know one cohort of students, that mm-hmm. that they will be reading this book for a few years to come, with still a sense that it has some kind of relevance to their own experience of literature and culture, which, of course, as we all, I think, realize, is not a given, particularly in the world that changes as quickly as our world now does.
Yeah, but I think that our kind of safety valve for this is really the kind of democratic nature
mm-hmm.
of the process, democratic nature of
of this theme, right? So many different voices, so many different points of entry, different lenses, different generational experiences that are brought into this book, different institutional frameworks that also very much affects us, right? How we write and to whom we write. And we have that amazing, on the one hand, an eclectic team. On the other hand, the team that really came together and as rigorously as it was possible followed that concept, that structure, that format. So we are hoping that that time will not disqualify quickly our voices, but even if it disqualifies some others should stay simply because there's quite a large variety.
But I would like to add to that some guidance that you provide for reading this volume. You already mentioned some of these ideas and some of these suggestions, but still, well, I very much appreciated that paragraph. So this is a quote. Readers would do well not to rush through this book. It doesn't have to be read in its entirety, nor does it need to be read in sequence. The approach can be random or with the reader acting like a contemporary flaner on a journey that is open to chance, sensitive to detail, and aimed at discovering not the whole of the city, but its individual fragments, with all that they entail. So I believe that it's very poetic. thank you so much, Agnieszka, Joanna, and Tamara, for joining me today. Again, congratulations on the publication of this impressive work, which offers new perspectives, not only for the study of Polish literature and culture, but also for the consideration of cultural phenomenon from the standpoint of the overlapping of the local and global. Being Poland, in this regard, provides space for the reconsideration of literature and culture within globalized context. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Today I spoke with Joanna Nizhinska and Tamara Trojanowska and Agnieszka Polakowska, editors of Being Poland, a new history of Polish literature and culture since 1918. Thank you for listening to the Literary Studies podcast and New Books Network.